This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to the Hope Centre, where real stories meet real conversations about mental health, growth, and hope. I'm Anna, and we're here to share, connect, and remind you that you're not alone. Let's dive in. Kia ora and welcome to the Hope Centre podcast, a project put together by Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust with the help of ORFM and Anytime Fitness in Dunedin. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover or are interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out to us on our Facebook page or email admin@lifematters.org.nz. Kia ora, I'm Anna.
And this is Omri.
We're both senior peer support workers at Life Matters and we'll be your hosts for this conversation about hope, healing and lived experience.
What a great time to be back in the studio.
I know, it's a lovely day here. I don't know about you, I'm feeling tired, but energized by the conversation that we're going to have today.
Yeah, and I feel like we say this every time, but always excited to have our guest on, and it's because we pick them because we're excited to talk to them. But yeah, today we're talking to Fiona Clapham-Howard, one of the many rock stars of the lived experience workforce, an intentional peer support trainer, a professional supervisor, a manager of many. Yeah, welcome Fiona. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, kia ora, thank you, tēnā kōrua. That's a beautiful intro. I'm tickled by the idea of thinking of myself as a rock star. My days of playing and singing in bands are long behind me, but now I'm thinking, oh, we could get a band together.
Yeah, we could.
I play involved in peer support.
I can play bass.
Could be amazing. There you go.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
We're learning new things already. Mm-hmm. So look, I think it's this month, October, I've hit 20 years of working in lived experience roles in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and increasingly now a little bit in Australia as well. Started off in a systemic advocacy role as a consumer advisor at what was then Canterbury DHB. I'm normally based in Otatahi, Christchurch. I've sort of cycled through a bunch of different things, governance from a peer perspective, peer support manager of a peer support team, director of a peer support service. But for the last several years, just before COVID, because I didn't know it was coming, I decided take a break from frontline stuff, take a step back. And for the last several years, what I've been doing is supporting the lived experience workforce with external supervision or reflective practice, with training, usually peer support training, but often peer advocacy as well, and other forms of professional development for peer and lived experience kaumahi and workforce development projects. So it's just sort of one step back from the front line and doing my bit to draw on that experience to make the work easier, make it make sense and make it sustainable. Not only sustainable, but I reckon regenerative and exciting and inspiring for the people doing the hard yards on the front line.
I think as well as using that lived experience you've got to understand what that is. And yeah, I can definitely say some of the questions you pose to us make me think sometimes more than I'd like to in the moment, but always have it in the back of the head, which definitely can say that it has, and you have strengthened my practice, Fiona.
Mm. Thank you. And look, we might let the listeners know that the three of us have met through intentional peer support training at the Hope Centre. Mm-hmm. And that we tend to see each other usually online because I'm not always in Dunedin, but sometimes I am there in person. But we meet for group reflective practice with other kaumahi and peer supporters from the Hope Centre.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Always really good discussions. Yeah.
I can't believe it's been so long since, our intentional peer support training that we did with a bunch of, I think we were just coming into our contracts and, being paid for the mahi that we do, and that was so long ago now. I can't believe how time has flown.
Mine was only 9 months ago.
Yeah.
Anna was probably 2 years ago, two years ago.
That's awesome.
And it's been just so lovely to walk alongside the Hope Centre through this time, because I know it's been a huge change to come from being very flex roots kind of organisation, lots of volunteer people working from the heart, into getting this big paid contract for peer support and then grappling with, well, what does that mean for practice? What does that mean for our workers? It's been a real privilege to, and it continues to be a privilege to work alongside you all, walk alongside you all with this as it grows and develops.
Thank you.
And I must say, when I see you in person in the odd time, like when I was coming to work the other day and then you walked past me, I find that strange to see you in person and not on a screen. I'm like, oh, she's real.
Yeah, real person.
In the flesh. Well, now you're over the sea in a different country, so.
Yeah, on the first leg of a trip back to the old country to get in touch with my father's birthplace, and I'm taking my daughter, my 26-year-old daughter, with me, picking her up in a day or two. Yeah, so
Woohoo! Heck
a bit of an
yeah.
odyssey, taking a month off. It's a new thing for me to do, but I've got to walk the talk. I'm always telling you to pace yourselves and do what you need to do. So this is my turn to take my own advice.
Nice.
Couldn't tell you the last time I had like a proper good holiday, a couple of years ago now. When was the last time you took some time off for yourself in this way?
Look, I'm always at the moment this year, I've been working harder at carving out space. I worked on some pretty big projects in the second half of last year that kind of bled into the first couple of months of this year and didn't really get a good break over Christmas like I normally would. So I really made a commitment to myself to get some long weekends and a week off at a time. It's pretty hard when you're self-employed. It's really hard to completely down tools. But yeah, taking a month off in the middle of the year that's not at Christmas, this is a new one for me. Haven't done this
Ooh.
before. So we'll see how it
Well
goes.
deserved. Well, I
Thank
feel
you.
like what you're heading to in this adventure that you're going on for your holiday might link quite nicely into the question that was left from our last guest.
Yeah, so Sophia from Sophia Space left Study Space left the question, if you could travel to any historical era or event, where would you travel to?
Well, I'd like to go back, what is it, about 500, 600 years to London, to the Globe Theatre, and attend a performance of a William Shakespeare play. Many reasons, like I'm a theatre kid from way back, and some of my professional training, I'm representing then,
Yes.
some of us Glee kids can all kind of burst into song in a minute. Yeah, some of my multi-faceted career and training has included training in physical theatre in Melbourne in the 1990s, and actually in New Zealand as well in the early 1990s. So I love theatre. Like anyone else, you know, I'm fascinated to know, did William Shakespeare really write William Shakespeare's plays? Who knows? There's quite a mystery about that. But I just think it would be incredibly magical to attend one of those performances. They went on for hours. It's almost like a sort of a sweaty mosh pit down on the floor with everyone and people talking and drinking and eating and throwing things at the stage. I think that would be a phenomenal way to spend a day. It would answer a lot of questions, and I think I'd really enjoy the experience.
Do you have a particular show you'd want to see?
Oh, well, I have a very soft spot for A Midsummer Night's Dream. I actually grew up down in Dunedin, attended Queens High School, and that was one of the productions we did at Queens High that I was in. So I've got a bit of a soft spot for it. I think it's a very magical play, and there's like a play within a play. It would be pretty cool. Hamlet would also be another really good one to see. Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome.
Do you have a favorite character in Midsummer Night?
I have a real soft spot for the mechanicals, the ones who do the play within the play. So, you know, Bottom, the character who acts, I know it's a strangely named for this day and age, but you know, accidentally ends up taking a love potion and falls in love, and the queen of the fairies, Titania, falls in love with him, and he's got an ass's head, and it's all just very silly and funny, and but maybe says something about the nature of how love can make us blind.
Oh, you're not wrong.
And gives you a good laugh along the way. So,
Yeah,
very true.
that's true. Did you have an answer?
For the historical era?
Yeah,
I
or
think
event?
last time I said Jimmy Carter's
Oh,
procession.
yes, you did. Oh, wow.
Yeah, just knowing how he changed processions for the future of, you know, how he has walked the furthest of any procession and on a day in the negatives, and I think the character of Jimmy Carter and his character speaks a lot to me, and of, you know, connection was a big part of his presidency and how he connected with people. And for me, that is very much peer support as well, and how he peer supported peace deals is really cool.
Awesome.
I listened to a podcast about the peace deal he did with Israel and Egypt. And very much, again, that felt like peer support because it was getting to know those people and how to know their interests to get them to engage. And he took them to Gettysburg, which is where a big civil war happened. And one of the leaders was ready to leave. He was going, this isn't working. I don't want to do this. And then Jimmy took them to Gettysburg, and that leader recited Abraham Lincoln's whole speech. And that just reconnected everybody. And I think that's awesome.
Phenomenal. This connection, worldview,
yeah.
Mutuality. I'm seeing it and moving towards what we want. There's all IPS in a snapshot there.
Yeah. What about you, Anna?
Oh, I haven't given this as a deeper thought as you have. The first thing that comes to my mind, and, you know, with more thought, I could have come up with something different perhaps, but I would go with my dad, and I think we would go to Live Aid in 1985. Mm. There's just something about that performance in my family, and especially obviously the Queen performance that comes on the TV at every single special occasion, and I think it would be really cool to experience that. I don't think they do things like that anymore. There's health and safety hazards galore, but I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
Different times. We do it differently now.
100%. Cool. So we've got some questions, particularly around intentional peer support and lived experience, to kind of share and to kind of ponder as a group together. I guess first off, it's been a long time since we've actually talked about intentional peer support and what intentional peer support is on the podcast. Mm. I think back in the first episode, which was months and months ago now, I was wondering, Fiona, if you would mind giving our listeners a wee bit of a refresh on what it is.
Sure. Sweet. Sure. Well, intentional peer support is more about the process of social change. I think the founder and most of us that work in it and train in it would agree with that. The founder, Sherry Mead, is certainly quoted very often as saying it's not about creating better mental health services or services in general. It's about fundamentally changing the way we relate to each other, the types of conversation we have, and, social change would sum that up. It arises out of activism and advocacy work from last century, and you can see it as a part of the progression of work around human rights and civil rights that really came to the foreground, particularly, I think, after the Second World War. Mm. Several movements there for liberation of individuals, for recognising what are human rights first off. It's a very big topic after Second World War. And then rights for many minority groups that are minorities within a bigger, often a colonised country. But this is not necessarily about ethnicity or religion. It can also be about demographics, like are we a member of the rainbow community? Mm. What does that look like to have equity with others? And as part and parcel of all that movement, that big movement of activism, we had people looking at rights for people who were treated under compulsion. I don't think I can find the word I'm looking for there. Forced into treatment in mental health inpatient units in particular. And the movement that was looking at people's experiences there kind of went in two different directions. Some people wanted to reform the systems and protest and do things differently, and some people, you know, these two things are not mutually exclusive. Mm. But the other branch of it is, what else is possible? How could we, as a society, connect with people who are experiencing altered realities or presenting themselves in a way that's challenging for their family and friends or those around them? What do people need when they're in those spaces? So, and peer support was an arm of what arose out of those kind of that form of activism.
Mm.
or psychiatric survivors, they're sometimes
Mm.
called. And Sherry Mead, who is from the US, she's not the only one, but she's the one who's founded what we now understand as intentional peer support. It's always had a pretty strong connection to Aotearoa New Zealand. Sherry's partner, Chris Hansen, is a Kiwi. Chris was a manager and a nurse, I think, in mental health settings, and had her own experience of mental distress and of using services, and kind of, I guess, had this bit of epiphany and kind of moved into the peer support realm. Very struck by Sherry, went off to meet her, and you know, the rest is history. The two of them are in love and have been in a partnership, both around the business of peer support, but also just as life partners for a very, very long time now. They live in Vermont in the US, but they do get back to New Zealand as often as they can. Yeah, and so I've had a great privilege of meeting Sherry on a few occasions, and
Yes.
Chris. Sherry has Parkinson's, which
Yes.
is a degenerative disease. And she's not working these days, and Chris has been working part-time for some years so that she can really enjoy as much time as possible with Sherry. And Chris is about to retire too at the end of
Right.
this year. So it's kind of like a bit of the end of an era and passing some of the torch to the next generation of people to hold this mahi, this work, and take it forward. It's in pretty good hands, I think. And it is a bit of a precious thing to hold. You know, this is Sherry's life work. She was someone who had several inpatient stays and discovered that some of the best support and the most useful kind of interventions, if you like, I'm doing that in inverted commas, came from fellow patients. The connection, the relationship, the fact that they had similar experiences but maybe different perspectives on it, she found that incredibly helpful. And a whole group of people formed around her over the years, and they together have kind of worked out this thing that has become intentional peer support. And it started off as a way of delivering what we would call respite services. So, you know, people that might need a bit of time out from the day-to-day could go to a residential setting entirely staffed by other people who had lived experience of mental distress and of using services, and who were practicing this, you know, relatively new thing called peer support at the time. Yeah, and
In
it's just slowly evolved.
the grand scheme of things, still relatively new.
Well, yeah, look, you know, the first training I went to was with Chris and Sherry, and they were doing a bit of a, you know, a road tour of New Zealand. I caught them for some of this in Christchurch. They did, I think at that stage it was a 4-day training, something like that, for IPS. This would have been in the early 2000s, maybe 2006, 2007. I was in a systemic advocacy role, so I didn't think I could really justify 4 days peer support training, because that wasn't what my role was. I wasn't going to be able to persuade my boss to release me for that and pay for it. But the fourth day was, I looked at it and I thought, oh, this is kind of like supervision. So it's what we would now call, in peer work, we would now call reflective practice, which has always been quite an important strand of peer support practice. You have to be very self-aware to do this work. It's relational work, so it's good to reflect with others as well as just self-reflection. And yeah, so I managed to swing getting to the fourth day and attending that. And look, I have to say, I didn't understand a word of it, I think, at the start. You know, this is like nearly 20 years ago now. And I'm like, I don't know. That was interesting, but I don't know if I get it. And I don't know, what am I going to do with this? So I look back on that now and go, what a long way it's come.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and to know that it was a model that was being discussed and being trained about in the early 2000s, it has only really felt, I know, emerging to me since, you know, Life Matters has had a contract and it's become more familiar. And now I'm glad to hear that as they're kind of ending their journey with it and, you know, having to pass torches on, that it is becoming more emerging in the sense that more workplaces are using it. That's really cool. I also didn't realize that Chris was a Kiwi. That's
It's pretty
awesome.
cool. Pretty cool. And look, I mean, I find them sort of, you know, in the 2000s, but they'd been working staff and peer respites from last century, we might say. So they'd been doing it for quite a while by the time I met them. So it's been around a long time, but you're right. I think in a lot of people's minds, it's still like, what is that? What does that mean? Because what we're familiar with is the kind of the medical version of, mental, what we call mental health, but I think it was really about mental illness, not really about mental health necessarily.
And when you look, you talk about those flax roots of intentional peer support and it being about social change. Social change does take time.
That's
and so, I guess, again, Anna and I being fairly new to it, really seeing that time and that change happening now to be much wider than what it was.
It's a real challenge, I think, because life matters. We've talked about this a lot, eh? It's you the contract for peer support service is coming from the health system, and the health system lens is that mental dis what we would call mental distress is an illness. It's a disorder. It can be diagnosed. It can be treated. Usually, in this country, we tend to just treat it with first and foremost with medication, but people might get to stay in an inpatient unit. If you're lucky, you might get some psychology and some talking therapies, some kind of therapeutic conversations going with people, but very few people get access to that and through the public system. And in some places more than others, you might get a cultural intervention if you're Māori or Pacifica, you might be able to access workers that come from that perspective and can help support you that way. But for most of us, it's seen as this is an illness. We will diagnose it and we'll give you some medication to deal with it. And peer support just goes, well, look, that's one way of looking at it. There are many, many other ways of making sense of these different experiences. And we tend in peer support to come down to recognizing we're human animals. Connection, relationship is fundamental to our survival. What is possible for healing and support through the mechanism of relationship?
Because I'm curious too around that, and we all have had to go through this journey at times. We talked about it being relational, and but also how the current system views lots of mental health as mental illness, and that inherently being negative of illness and having that disconnect, and wondering how you reclaimed a lot of your own mental health journey. And have been able to view that more of a strength and use it as a strength as well.
Well, look, I mentioned that I grew up in Dunedin. I lived there until I was about 21.
Which I did not know, by the way.
There you go, a little factoid. So one of the reasons I love coming back down to see people in person down there. I still got whānau in Dunedin as well. I struggled with, I think, really common feelings to a lot of folk, of feeling very different, that people didn't really get how things were for me, and I didn't really know how to, I would say quite distressed, quite anxious, quite depressed, probably. And just really struggling. And in my case, it was to do with childhood trauma. But again, people, when you grow up with those things, you don't realize it's different. You only know what you know as a child. Your family is the only family you know, and you just think, look, this is how the world is. So it wasn't until I got kind of like well into my teens and started to get a wider group of friends, including someone actually who was a counsellor at Ashburn Clinic down there in Dunedin. And they were instrumental in getting me into seeing a counsellor and starting to open up conversations about this childhood trauma. And yeah, I was very lucky to find good group support, a peer support group actually in my early 20s. It was by the time I'd left Dunedin. But for people who'd been through similar experiences to me, and that was just eye-opening. It's like, oh my gosh, not everyone has this, and I'm not the only person who feels the way I feel. And start, I guess there was a shift for when your question is about how do you reclaim something here, part of that journey of getting therapy and getting support and starting to talk about these experiences and the impact they were having on me growing up. part of the shift in there was going, actually, instead of thinking of this as something that's wrong about me, that I'm kind of broken, I'm the bit that doesn't fit. Because I mean that attitude can take you to some pretty dark places. We know the Hope Centre has arisen from a suicide prevention mission, and certainly have grappled a lot of my life with going, oh, the answer to these problems is to check out a life. I'll go. And I think when you're thinking is I'm the problem, I'm the one who's wrong, it's a short step to going, well, and then we can remove the problem by removing me. So the shift, and I think the recovery came from going, well, actually, if I'm not the problem, if the problem is what happened, what was done to me, what was around me, what wasn't provided, the support that wasn't offered, well, I can do something about that. That's very empowering and just a wonderful kind of position shift to take up, and actually a whole lot of new possibilities open up when that happens. So look, it hasn't happened overnight, like the ads, but it did happen, does happen, and I think it's an ongoing journey. I keep that this way of practicing does lend itself to keeping on discovering new shades of meaning, new insights, new ways of looking at things that are incredibly helpful over time.
Yeah, and I like that you said it's a work in progress, because I think for a lot of us, the lived experience is ongoing and more so living as opposed
Yes.
to lived, full stop. But I really resonate with what you said around no longer viewing it as this is who I am or this is part of me, and as something that has happened to me. And to me, like, seeing it as something that's detached makes it easier to process and kind of work out what I can do around the situation or how I can navigate it. Because I think when I think about something being wrong with me, that feels a lot more immovable.
Look, and I think this is part of the issue with how, like, the general public, the way we've been sold this idea of mental illness and mental health challenges, is that we've really been told it's a disorder and it's an illness and it's something wrong, a broken brain, chemical imbalance. I mean, these are actually myths. The chemical imbalance is a myth that's been roundly kind of disproved. But it still is incredibly persistent, because then the answer is, well, I take something that will shift the chemical balance and then I'm fixed, and most of us know it is by no means as simple as that. There's many things you can do to affect brain chemistry. I'm not saying we're not affecting brain chemistry. Psychotropic medication is just one of those things.
And I think is when we Again, a lot of the mahi we do at the Hope Centre isn't this is the only approach. This is an approach that helps alongside many others. And if we can provide, again, what we find a lot of what people are missing is community. And so if we can start that community and then, or support and then build that up in many other aspects, then that is how we create better conversations around, again, in inverted commas, wellness.
That's right. Look, one sort of metaphor that or example that was given often in the years I was working in systemic advocacy, say you have someone who is experiencing intimate partner violence, they may well get a diagnosis of depression, and why wouldn't you? It's a pretty miserable situation to be in, and you might not be able to see a way out of it. But prescribing someone an antidepressant doesn't solve the problem of getting the bash on a regular basis. So it's not to say that the medication isn't the answer, but I don't think it's the full picture, eh? And this is where our relational approach and peer support can sit beautifully alongside other interventions that people might put into their lives, and just provide a fuller way of supporting them into some whole order, some well-being that makes sense for them, because it's different for everybody. What's going to really make the difference, I think. Different, shades, like a mixing desk. You might have this one moved up to 8, this one's down at 5 or something.
And that's exactly what you're saying. Again, it's about about sharing. It's about different perspectives, and if we can provide different perspectives, it's creating a whole new world. And yeah, thank you so much for your insights so far, Fiona. We're gonna take a break and get a message from our sponsor, and then I'm excited to continue these conversations when we come back.
At Anytime Fitness Dunedin, our mission is to raise the self-esteem of the world. A healthy lifestyle doesn't start and stop at the gym. It starts with a plan, which is why we offer solutions that incorporate fitness, nutrition, well-being and recovery. With three local clubs to choose from, with 24/7 access, we're certain you'll find your fit. Contact us today to get started. Call 03 455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Welcome back to the Hope Centre podcast. We're going to carry on our conversation with the lovely Fiona. I think it's been really interesting to hear about your experience and, you know, how you, oh, the love heart on the screen. I forgot you can do that. I've found it really insightful so far. And we've got a couple more questions that we would love to get to before we wrap on up. The first one being an important part of IPS, intentional peer support, and purposeful peer support is reflection. How do you practice self-reflection?
Oh, great question. I think the longer I do this work, the more I find it just becomes automatic. I think when you come into it for the first time, though, you know, we're kind of just barreling along doing what we do. So it is a discipline. I think you have to make it a practice, like flexing a muscle, doing your self-reflective workout. So you might do some journaling. Reading is really helpful, reading some stuff around peer approaches, and allowing that to affect you in some way, and what does it mean for you. I'm a big believer in following the power of a metaphor. I think a lot of peer support draws on metaphors, an image or an idea or a concept or that's like a symbol for an experience. One of the things I've been very struck with lately, I had the great privilege of working with Asian Family Services at their Auckland base, and they have a team of youth peer workers, and they did intentional peer support training earlier this year, which was just fantastic. And Asian Family Services, you can look this up on their website. They've got this beautiful metaphor for the experience of being a migrant, leaving a country and coming to live in another country, and it's a fruiting tree. So the idea is that the migrant is the tree, and the leaves represent certain things, and the fruit represents something else. If you are migrating, you're like transplanting that tree. So you basically have to cut through the root and bring it to the new place, and then replant it. And it's not going to fruit probably for a while until it gets settled there. And the leaves might all drop off. So certain aspects that all contribute to a kind of a whole being, well-being, might be missing for a while until you can, get your roots down into this new soil. And you're going to need the right conditions if you're in the wrong place, if the soil doesn't have the nutrients you need, if you're not getting the right light and warmth. None of that's going to work. So I think that's for me, a really beautiful example of a metaphor for reflecting and making sense of experience. As human beings, which we are fundamentally, we're all humans. Wherever we're from, wherever we live, whatever we've been through, we are human beings. We have this fundamental need for connection. That's how we survive. And then I think we have this great need for stories. To help us make sense of our experiences, to uplift us, to help sustain us in what can often be hard times. So a good metaphor does a lot of that. You can find a lot of meaning and joy and excitement in them. So, I try to stay alive to those little images that might float up in my mind, or a kind of a concept, and go, well, what does that mean? How does that reflect something of my experience? So that's how I'd go about it for self-reflection. I would also say this is relational work. So self-reflection's only going to take you so far in peer support. Very important that we practice reflecting with at least one other person. And if you work in groups, it's a really good idea to practice reflecting in groups as well. Just there's all these kind of like meta layers to what we do. If your process kind of reflects the kind of work you're doing, I think that stands us in good stead. That we work in relationally with a person who's in distress, we'll also reflect on that with someone else. And that is a way, an intentional peer support, they say, going to co-reflection is like doing IPS about your IPS.
Yeah.
So it gets a bit meta, but yeah.
Because I'm wondering,
it's congruent echoes.
Yes. Yeah. I'm wondering as well, kind of with your practice and with your reflection, how you notice that changes with self-reflection compared to peer or group.
So what's the difference of self-reflection versus?
What's the difference for you in terms of, I know for self-reflection, I very much look at what did I do and what were the steps that I took compared to group reflection. I feel like it's a bit more of a wider scope of what happens.
Yeah, I guess self-reflection, you can, you know, it's all about you, isn't it? You can set your own kind of agenda for it and take from that. I think it's good to kind of go, what am I doing with this? How will I take this forward? That can be a little harder in group reflection to get that individual development. But you can take any opportunity in this work to reflect with one other person as well. Like, it doesn't have to be waiting once a month to go and see someone outside your organisation. A lot of peer workers around the motu don't get that opportunity, actually, to see someone outside of their organisation. There's something about, I think, reflecting with someone else that keeps us maybe accountable to ourselves, that holds up a different mirror to us, allows different perspectives to be considered. So when you can reflect, I would say take your self-reflection, then road test it with at least one other person. Hey, this is what I've been thinking about. This is what I've noticed. How is this for you? What do you make of that? And then you get that extra perspective, which means we're not just going to be kidding ourselves. You know, if all we ever did was self-reflection, I think we might end up just, maybe not as humble and as potentially useful as we can be when we are checking that reality out with someone else.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to be self-critical about yourself as well, right? Yeah. And, you know, there's often, like, post-session, I may think about the things that I could have done differently and the things that went well, but then I'll go into reflective space, and actually talking it out with somebody else is really helpful at providing those new perspectives, but also, you know, kind of validating the work that you have done that you may not recognize. I even know today I had two sessions this morning, and Omri very much called me out on my self-criticism, and it's like, oh, maybe I did do this right, or maybe da 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 da. It's just nice to connect with somebody else.
I like to think I held up the mirror.
You held up the mirror. But I guess it's also for people listening who aren't working within this space, this can apply outside of IPS and outside of this work too.
Hey? Sure. This is very much a citizen approach. There's nothing in the practice of IPS that says it has to happen in paid employment or in health services at all. Lots of people do this work as volunteers. Lots of people do it within social services or other settings. There are communities, I'm thinking there's one in Christchurch where I live, that's like a community of practice for people who are not in paid roles. They're just going, we are going to support each other through these experiences of madness and, you know, distress from these principles. So they're not doing it as a service. They're going, we are a community, and this is how we're going to be a good community with each other. So, yeah, and I love that point, Anna, that when we reflect with other people, they might help us to be a lot less harsh on ourselves, because we can be incredibly harsh on ourselves, So, yeah, reflecting with others gives us a more balanced take on ourselves. It's like, hey, what about this bit? Yeah, you're making a lot of this, but I also noticed this about you.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm wondering as well, with that, not only that self-reflection, but with that peer reflection, if that has helped you at all in terms of how you use your lived experience.
Yeah, look, these days, one of the ways I think about this is, and have had the great privilege of doing some work with TAPO, National Workforce Development Agency for Mental Health and Addictions, and they've got a really good for lived experience workforce. So we put together a framework for reflecting on lived experience mahi, whether that's peer support, systemic advocacy, consumer auditors, evaluators, educators, governance, leadership, all the different peer and lived experience roles we have. I think these days, in terms of experiential knowledge, so yeah, lived experience roles, you've got to have lived experience, but I think on its own, that's not enough. What we're looking for when you're doing this in a purposeful way is, what sense have I made of it? What have I learned? What am I still learning? Because I regard myself as still learning every day. It's a great privilege to get that mirror held up to me at times and kind of go, oh, I could do that better. Or, oh, I actually did better than I thought I did on that. Experiential knowledge, starting to think, what is having the discernment to know, well, I've got all these stories and all these experiences I've lived. You know, I've got a few years on you two, young kaimahi here, but you know, you'll be amassing a good crop of stories as well. Experiential knowledge is having the wisdom to know which bits of that are going to be useful in this context I'm in now, this person in front of me, this group, this situation. It's not about just telling your life story from woe to go. It's about being able to pull out the bits. And increasingly, I will use those kind of metaphors or think in terms of themes. And we've got some pretty, you're doing that work on the Tupuranga framework of reflective practice for lived experience workforce. Got me thinking that it kind of all boils down to these themes around experiential knowledge, the relational nature of lived experience work, that we've got a lot in common with Indigenous approaches like whanaungatanga, manaakitanga, lavar from Pacifica things, the space that connects us. So we've got this relational focus that is reciprocal and very aware of the impact we're having on each other, whether that's individuals, groups or systems. And the bit that I think is often left out when we think about lived experience work is attending to power. So that's thinking about social forces at play in someone's life over time, at a moment in time, privilege or relative privilege to each other in different aspects of life. I might have lost track of the question, Omri.
No, that's really good.
Full of knowledge as well.
Yeah. But I think, you know, exactly as you were saying, is so much of peer support is attending to that power, and that power of, of everything we've been through and privilege, but also the power of, because the Hope Centre is a service, there is that expectation, or, you know, people come in terms of talk therapies, of there is an inherent power, and it's something talked about today in one of my sessions, was how do we break down in that power, and how do we see each other more as equal, and recognizing again, it is, as Anna said before, it is living experience, and you know, there are still aspects of my life that I am struggling with and that am also looking for support for, and this person is a person that does support me with that a bit too, and you know, how cool it is to see someone who is accessing a service for support and is also be able to help. And for them, it is such a purpose of being able to help others. So I'd provide that in a safe way. And again, as you said before, it isn't trauma dumping or dumping your whole life story. It's being very intentional about what you pick and how to use it and how to bring it forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think being able to think in terms of themes, and those three themes seem to hold, they're interconnected with each other. You know, you can't think about reciprocal relationships without also attending to power dynamics. But they are quite a good way to talk about our work, to draw on, to kind of frame up our lived experience so that we're using it in a really purposeful, very intentional way.
Cool. Well, I think I'm leaving this conversation with lots to think about and a lot of wisdom to take forward with me. And we've got a couple last questions that we would love to ask you before we do so. We will pop to another ad from our sponsor.
Anytime Fitness Dunedin is here to raise the self-esteem of the world. Whether you're new to fitness or getting back into a routine, now's the time to put yourself first. With a supportive community, three local clubs, flexible membership options and access anytime, we're here to help you reach your goals. Get in touch with our friendly team today. Call 03455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Any place, any time, any fitness, you can be there.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, thank you so much, Fiona, for coming along, and really appreciate your perspectives and, again, what you bring and, as Anna said, how you make us think. And I'm sure the listener is taking stuff away, and I really encourage them to think about how they view their own mental health and their journey. And again, how that can change and how that perspective can change. And I'm wondering if you have any quick final thoughts or messages that you'd like to share with those who might be struggling.
Oh, look, know that it's normal to struggle. Mm. I get very affected by the work of Brené Brown. She says, look, we have, I'm a parent. My daughter's probably about your age. She's 26 at the moment.
Yeah, in between.
But you get in between. You get this precious child in your arms and you just want to keep them safe from everything. And of course, that's not how the world works. We're not going to be able to wrap them up in cotton wool. And so, you know, part of Brené Brown's study, her stuff is based on a lot of research, and she's not just kind of pulling it out of thin air. Mm. She says, look, we are hardwired for struggle. This is not to say that you want to chuck people into the depths of trauma, but it says something about let's not shy away from struggle. Mm. I think more and more in the time and age we're in, we have so many opportunities to distract ourselves, to deflect, to not look at these things, that it can be very easy to kind of lose ourselves and things that feel good in the short term but aren't going to serve us in the long run as a way of avoiding that struggle. Mm. But of course, you know, it's easy for me to say sitting in a pretty comfortable, privileged position in life these days with pretty good mental health most of the time. I think the main message is if you're struggling, first off, you know it's normal and that it can be got through. Don't try and do it on your own. Mm. The hardest and most risky thing of this is isolation. Mm-hmm. We have health and support when we reach out to others. I do believe that relationship can be like a genuine lifeline for folk. Don't make sudden final decisions on temporary problems without crowdsourcing some answers from people, because there's going to be people around you that are going to see it differently. And the act of talking this stuff out, getting it out of your head and into a conversation, allows a multitude of other possibilities to emerge.
Yeah.
So don't do it on your own. Mm-hmm. Don't do it on your own. Reach out. Beautiful. And reach in. If you, I think we do often put a lot of the burden on individuals to reach out to others. You'll know this, I know this, at the darkest times it's really hard to do that. Mm-hmm. So check up on each other, stay connected. If you haven't heard from someone for a while, reach in.
Yeah.
Let them know you're around. They might rebuff you, check on them again. You know. So I think it's on all of us to create, this is back to the social change thing, right? What is the kind of world we want to live in? Do we want to live in a world where people are open to connecting and feel warm and are accepting of you wherever you're at? So we can practice it with others. We don't, and then it's maybe easier for us to reach out if we're struggling, and definitely easier for others to reach out if they know people will also reach in.
Wow.
Totally. And thank you so much for that final message. And do you want to check in as well? Because you said, you know, I'm glad that you're in a privileged position now, but don't also want you to diminish the hard work that you have put in.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And it continues. I continue my own training and learning. And look, this work is wonderful. I get new insights and new recognitions every single day. Beautiful. It's great.
Yeah.
So we like to wrap up with a final five, a quick fire final five questions, with the last question leaving something for the next person. So we'll start off our quick fire final five. What does well-being mean to you?
Look, trying to get a good balance across something like your four taha of wharetapa whā. Looking after my body, particularly as I'm aging, it's not an optional thing anymore. You've got to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
My mind is supported by that physical health, but also comedy. Love comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Attending to spiritual needs for me, that a lot of that is meditation, and definitely practicing what I preach around having good people around me, and a balance between like chosen solitude, but also connection and companionship.
Nice.
Is there anything you do that brings you a sense of calm, balance, or peace?
I'd come back again to my meditation practice. It is. Yeah, really, really good for just putting stuff in perspective and going, look, you know, there's setbacks all the time. The one of the mantras or the phrases from meditation, mindfulness meditation, is begin again. You know, your mind wanders. It's okay. You don't have to give yourself a hard time about it. Just guide it back like you would a loved elderly relative, then begin again.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Come on, grandma.
Yeah,
Start again.
cool. If you could make one rule that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
Probably begin again. One rule. Goodness me, I'm not
Do
good at rules.
meditation.
One rule that everyone had to follow. Oh no, I don't think I can do that one.
That's all
Sorry.
right.
No
Not
worries.
quick fire. I'd be more than
Yeah. I think Cleo's was everyone has to walk on the left side of the footpath.
Oh look, yep, get that. Don't try it in Germany though, because they get very upset about that. If you're in Germany, go on the right side of the
Oh my
staircases and so on.
goodness.
But,
Because I think it was, yeah, road rules apply to footpath. Yeah.
What would you tell your younger self now?
Oh, I would say, and look, I have had this conversation in therapy many times with myself. Hang in there. It's going to be amazing. You are going to live the most wonderful life and do the most incredible things that you just cannot even imagine now. It's going to be okay.
Nice. Cool. The final question is not really a question, but it's to leave one for the next guest.
Yeah. Well, look, and this is, I think I'm inspired by this idea of your younger self. So my question would be, what when you were little, what did you think you were going to be when you grew up? I'll let you know what mine was. I thought I was going to be a singer. I remember being like 3 or 4 years old, and there was some songs that I'd listened to a lot on the radio, loved music, and I remember swinging on a swing in the backyard and just singing at the top of my lungs, maybe 3, 4 years old, like putting on a whole concert for the neighborhood behind the fence and singing my heart out and feeling like I'm flying on a swing, you know. So I just
No,
thought,
that's awesome.
being a singer, that's a good thing to be,
Oh, gosh.
That's fun. That's really cool.
I think
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be a vet nurse because I loved animals.
Dream.
I didn't quite comprehend the consequences of being a vet nurse, and I support a guest actually who is a vet nurse, and some of the stories I hear are like pretty horrific. I also thought I was going to be a wildlife photographer at one point in my life. My mum never lets me live this down because that came after taking photographs of my neighbor's dog. She never lets me live that one down. Do you have an answer?
I had a new one every 5 minutes. Again, I wanted to be a vet at one point, and then I remember fly spraying a fly and watching it die, and I thought, I can't do this. I can't do it.
Too much of an empath.
Yeah, but again, along the lines of, you know, there was the wanted to play basketball, or again, singer or musical theatre, big musical theatre family.
Cool.
Can I add one coda to that? And this is an example of, you know, the kind of insights that I hadn't thought of this. I'd just come up with the question, and as you've spoken, I've thought, oh yeah, when I had a really, really serious, difficult episode of depression at one point, I don't know, early 30s, and had a terrible dark night of the soul, you know, sat up all night wrangling with, was I going to continue living or not? Spoiler alert, I did. I went back to some of this and said, what was it I wanted to be when I was younger? What were some of the dreams that got interrupted with me? And this is how I ended up going to physical theatre school in my 30s, when everyone else in the course was kind of in their 20s, because it's like that was something I had discovered at high school and really
Amazing.
enjoyed, and then had let go of because I was so depressed and miserable in my teens. So yeah, it's a question with a lot of layers. Come back to what you wanted to be when you were little can provide some stuff that can really support your well-being as an adult, I think. Come
Fantastic
back to
question.
it in another way, you know. This is a moving towards what is it I want in my life.
That's lovely.
Thank
Very
you.
lovely. Well, I want to say a final thank you, Fiona, for joining us on the podcast. It's always nice to connect with you in any capacity, but I suppose this is something a wee bit different, and I've really enjoyed getting to learn a wee bit about more about yourself and hear more about the wealth of knowledge that you bring to our mahi. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for inviting me. It's fantastic. For sure. To know you two a bit better too.
Yeah, anytime. Who knows what may happen in season two. Thank you, Omri, for being my co-host again.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you to ORFM, to Life Matters, and to Anytime Fitness for sponsoring the podcast. If anyone listening has got any ideas or anything that they would like us to discuss on the podcast, please reach out to us at admin@lifematters.org.nz. Cool. That's all from us this week. We'll see you later.
Ka kite.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to our Hope Centre podcast. The most important message we can leave you with today is that it's okay to ask for help and support. You can contact us at Life Matters on 027 240 0114 by phone or text, or send us a message on our Facebook page. You can also contact us through our website. Just look up lifematters.org.nz. You can also drop in to see us at 63 Hanover Street. We're open every day except Mondays. From Wednesday to Sunday, we're open until 9 p.m. If you need support out of those hours, free call or text 1737. If you'd like to listen again or hear other episodes in this podcast, go to oar.org.nz or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.